Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Public Access America. We're just waiting for Jeffrey, as we always are around this time, but I wanted to do a little house cleaning while we wait. Wanted to let you know that Public Access America has almost 600 episodes of historical original audio that you should really check out and enjoy. And you can find that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Player FM, TuneIn Radio, the Stitcher Smart Radio app, Overcast, Podcast Addict, and so many more. Have fun with that. And tell us where you're hearing us. We'd like to hear it. We'd like to see it in our stats. Here is Jeffrey. Ooh, this is exciting. So soon.
Salam alaikum, everyone.
What starts here changes the world. Well, I've got to admit, I kind of like it. What starts here changes the world.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.
The average American will meet 10,000 people in their lifetime.
I was handcuffed to another man from another tribe whose language I did not speak.
Don't think, feel.
But if every one of you changed the lives of just 10 people, and each one of those people changed the lives of another 10 people, and another 10.
We did not know each other, and we could not speak to each other, because if we could have spoken to each other, we might have been able to figure out what was happening to us.
To every politician who was taking donations from the NRA, name on you.
I believed them when they said they were sleeping on concrete floors. I believed them. Children being separated from their parents in front of an American flag. I believe them.
And you can change the entire population of the world, 8 billion people.
And if we could have figured out what was happening to us, we might have been able to prevent it.
If you think it's hard to change the lives of 10 people, change their lives forever.
Well, it didn't happen. Here we are.
I believe these women.
You're wrong.
I feel extremely lucky to be here with all of you fighting for justice, for equality, for the right for us to equally exist in this country.
There were 329 uprisings, 157 cities within 4.5 years. And neither Martin nor Fannie had any control over that.
We might be headed to the promised land of speaking the truth and finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
But their children were saved, and their children's children. Generations were saved by one decision, one person. But changing the world can happen anywhere, and anyone can do it. So what starts here can indeed change the world. But the question is, what will the world look like after you change it?
Welcome to Public Access America.
Make a stand. I know I did. Thank you very much. And may God bless America. May God bless America. May God bless America.
Yeah.
There he is. Hey, what's up?
Oh, you know, just chilling out, drinking my morning coffee.
Me too. Love it. I was just going through some house cleaning really quick. I was telling people they can find all of our episodes everywhere. And check out the live stream every Sunday morning, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Check out Adam Has a Beard because he had his second annual spiritual conference. I was a part of the first one. I was snubbed for the second one for better talent. So yay. Congratulations to him.
Awesome.
And a shout out to my hosts from Inspirations Beyond Disabilities who are all gathered together in Miami having a great time. And I love that. You know, they didn't even know each other before I started the podcast. And like day one, they just became best friends. So I'm really excited for them and all that. How are you doing? How was your week?
Oh, man, it's been busy. You know, yeah. I've been basically doing two jobs at once.
Oh.
And it's exhausting, but you know, my hope is that as my organization goes through the hiring process, they ultimately end up considering me. So
okay.
In the end, one way or the other, you know, it'll be nice when some of this is finally handled and over.
It's amazing. I think the whole country per person is just going through transition. Everybody I talk to is moving or changing or doing something. And I wonder if that's because they feel confidence to do that, you know what I mean? Or because COVID is ending, or if it's just the way the world is, you know?
You know, I would say COVID's not ending, but the safety is improving.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, people aren't feeling like they have the reins on themselves like they've had in the past in order to, you know, pursue certain things. I was actually talking with a friend about that, just because, like, you know, it seems like right now every state is now getting to the point of they're hurting for people to work.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's one of those things where it's like, you know, the whole I'm not the left, I'm not the right. Mm-hmm. You know, on one hand, you know, to me, like, a lot of this made sense just in that, you know, until we could get vaccines out to people and make sure that, you know, we were doing everything we can in that regard, you know, everything reopening just didn't seem as safe. It just wasn't time yet.
Yeah.
Mathematically speaking, I still don't think it's time, but we're now at a tipping point in the vaccine race where we're getting to where there's going to be more supply than there is demand. Yeah. And, you know, really it's the same way with jobs. And so one of the things that I'm starting to tell people as much as I can is, like, right now there's a lot of great paying jobs out there that are available that are above minimum wage. And if you are not getting yourself vaccinated and trying to get your foot in the door in some of these positions that maybe you didn't think you had a chance at before, but because they're hurting, you do now.
Right.
You know, this is your chance to get in and get ahead of the fact that pretty much I imagine that every state is going to cut off the federal unemployment aid by the end of July.
Yeah. It's gonna have to end at some point.
Well, and it's scheduled to end, I think, at the end of September. Mm. So, like, getting those high-paying jobs while they're available, getting the vaccines now that they're readily available, I mean, like, this is your chance to take what has been probably the worst 15, 16 months of our lives. And, you know, this is your chance to turn it around on its head and say, you know what, I'm going to move onward and upward.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But sometimes you need to get your foot in the door, and a lower wage at a great company is better than a higher rate wage at a crappy company. So people should consider that, you know. And I want to say to companies, maybe you should consider hiring more disabled people, because we are definitely willing to work, you know.
Exactly. And that's, you know, and that's just it is that, you know, companies and people need to figure out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, for me and my organization, you know, my organization focuses on community, and that's, you know, it's not that I didn't have the chance to work at larger organizations given where I live.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't align with my value set and what I want to do.
Exactly.
I know that if I wanted to, I could make a few phone calls and probably get my foot in the door somewhere else.
Mm.
But that's not what I want, because that's not who I've ever been. You know, I like to focus on, you know, the immediate needs of community, and that's where I feel the best when I'm in my work environment.
Nice.
Because I really don't feel like I'm working. So that's just me personally.
I like that. I mean, people have asked me why stay in the middle? Why criticize everybody and alienate your audience? And that's my values, is I'm always trying to bring reason to the argument. I want to be the middleman, the referee, the person going, wow, you know, like, no. So I would rather get what we're doing with my morals than sensationalize something and go with the trends just to get listens and go with people's preset opinions. I'm here to help you question your opinions, you know what I mean? Even if you're right, everything should be tested in theory, and if you're right, then it should hold up to my arguments. Because I don't make the smartest arguments, you know what I mean?
Well, and even still, you know, if you're not questioning the things around you,
mm-hmm.
you know, then you open yourself up to, you know, just general groupthink. And that's how you get into where we're at currently, where groupthink is so pervasive, but the groupthink that's now prevalent is just absolutely fucking nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we've surrounded ourselves with people who just readily and inherently agree with us. We shut out voices that don't agree with us. We look for the things that we believe to be true, not whether or not, you know, you can test them to find out whether they are true or not.
Right. In fact.
And so you just end up creating the sounding board of, you know, I'm right until somebody, you know, shows up with a set of information that says, no, in fact, you're not. And then people feel like they're physically attacked. And it's like, you know, this is why, and it's why, you know, as scientists, when people say, trust the science, we go, ooh, it's a process. Mm. And it very much is it's right until it isn't.
Well, the thing is, Republicans spent 4 years owning the libs and having a great time with it. And the libs are having a great time retaliating. And so you're not getting these conversations without tones, without argumentative tones or sarcastic tones, or you're just stupid for what you think tones. We're not worried. We just want to hurt each other. We don't want to be like, hey, come here, sit down. Guess what? You know, you might be wrong. You might be right. Part of it might be right. You know, you might have a nugget of truth in there, but let's talk about that. We don't do that. We're all like, haha, we got you.
it's all about sound bites for our respective news organizations and mm-hmm. Twitter clips that people can then retweet and share far and wide. It's not about, if it were discussions on the actual policies and actually about compromise, you know, there's plenty of things that could be done mm-hmm. where, you know, the right gets what they want, the left gets what they want, and the people on the fringes are pissed because they don't get what they want.
Yeah, I've never gotten what I want.
Dude, I'm not even fringe and I don't even get what I want. So
exactly. And I was just telling my friend the other day, I was like, what if black people aren't the problem? What if it's the people telling you that the black people are the problem? You know, like,
right.
I don't know why we're siding with politicians over other Americans when as a voice, we drastically outnumber the politicians, you know?
Well, it goes back to that inherent discussion, you know, of we feel safe within our own party and we think that our own party is right. Mm-hmm. And when our own party isn't in power, then the government is inherently evil and it can't be trusted and this, that, and the other. And I'm over here in the middle going, what if neither of them can be inherently trusted?
Exactly. But my point is, even in the Democrats, they have a progressive caucus, a black caucus, a moderate caucus, you know, a conservative caucus. And so anytime you get a group, eventually that group is going to eat itself because nobody is pure enough to be in the original group. And so you have splinter groups. And there's this big thing called intersectionality, which means what you deal with, I also deal with. I might be white and disabled. You might be. Jacob Blake is black and disabled. So there's an intersectionality there. You know what I mean? LGBTIA has an A in it, which stands for asexual or ally. There's an intersectionality there. I'm an ally, you know, so I support them and they should be supporting me and we should be supporting immigrant rights because we're humans and there's an intersectionality to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what people get confused is there's politics, which is running for office. There's governing, which is actually representing the people that elected you. And then there's legislation, which is creating things based on all of that. Mm-hmm. But politics doesn't have to rule the day. A Republican doesn't have to say, because of my politics, I'm not voting to fund the Capitol Police. He should say, politics aside, is this reasonable. Yes, we should fund the Capitol Police. It's not a partisan issue. And we have to stop adding politics like to everything. It's not a seasoning that goes with everything. It makes a lot of stuff taste bad. And we need to pull it out of our recipes and then have these salt and pepper conversations, you know?
Well, and, yeah, but it goes back to the whole fact that everybody's looking for a sound clip of them owning the libs or owning the GOP or, you know, it's really frustrating because the number of times people think that they're owning the opposite side, I can literally look at the argument and in about 5 seconds absolutely destroy it either way.
Either way, yeah. And I can too by just going, uh-uh.
Or, you know, or even just taking a second to think about, it's like, wow, you really just alienated about half the people because you think that one specific way should be the entire way for the country rather than going, okay, yeah, this works for me and it works for a lot of people, but this way works for them and a lot of other people. And my point really wasn't much of a point at all.
Right. You're looking at different topological maps. I swear. Yeah. It's a weather map over migration patterns of birds. And we're both going, look, they're totally different. And we're like, yeah, but it's the same planet, you know?
Exactly. And that's what's so frustrating about it is that, you know, I don't have the brain capacity to deal with conspiracy theorists on either side. I don't have the brain capacity to deal with people that are looking for a soundbite or a news clip. It just isn't, it goes to that whole question of why are you listening? Are you listening to learn? Or are you listening to respond?
Exactly.
And most people are just listening just enough to be able to make a counterpoint that may or may not be well within the realm of what is even happening.
Right. Hashtag conversations.
Yeah. And that's just it. It's so crazy to me. It's like, you know, you've got one side that sits down and talks about how, you know, how they don't understand why, you know, black people aren't supporting them more, you know, when you look at, like you were saying, intersectionality. You've got people who are devoutly religious and black, so why does that mean that they should vote liberal? Like that might not necessarily fit with their worldview. You know, just because someone's a person of color, that doesn't mean that they're a liberal, and that's kind of a really fucked up way of thinking. If that's how you go,
you can strip them away just on the abortion rights. You know, It's conservatives believe that and churchgoers believe that. So you have this intersectionality there on a subject that is very interesting to me. You know what I mean? I'm not studied up on it, but there's bills to change the law to prevent abortions after 15 weeks instead of 20 weeks. And I can't help but think they say that 20 weeks is because at that point the fetus is viable. But what if we learned in the past 40 years that the fetus is then viable at 15 weeks? If there's evidence of that, then we should consider talking about that. You know what I mean? Instead of just saying it's an arcane law and they're trying to go back to zero when it's 15 weeks.
Well, and so here's what you have. You also have to take in to account the advancements in medical science. I mean, they've created the artificial womb where you can they're thinking that they can actually go from conception to birth,
right?
In an artificial womb. So does that mean that you know any fertilized egg is now considered viable?
That's a discussion to have, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and that's just and this is where it just gets so crazy and so wonky, because just because something's viable, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be well taken care of. The idea that this is, you know, where I always pull up Futurama, there's no consensus that life is important. because when you look at any of it, when you look at any of the arguments out there, you have a bunch of people saying, you know, all lives matter, and they support the death penalty. They support they support, what was the other one I was going to say? Oftentimes they'll end up supporting the police when they straight up execute someone over something that's not a death penalty offense.
They're happy to pull you off insurance. They're happy to keep disabled people in poverty. They're happy to keep gay people from adopting children that they insist are born.
They're happy to keep people from being able to obtain benefits that keep people alive.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so like you've got all of this All Lives Matter stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's they also support gun rights, which kill people all the time.
You know, and so it's like, okay, well, that's bullshit. And then you have people being pro-choice. And then, you know, the moment someone says, okay, well, I choose to believe that abortion is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly they're all pissed. It's like, okay, well, where was the pro-choice in this matter? Because just because someone doesn't think, it boils down to people like to put their nose in everybody else's business until someone puts their nose. And people like to make rules for everybody else until that rule comes back on them.
That's right.
You know, you see it constantly. But abortion is bad. Knocked up their mistress. You need to go get an abortion. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't even tell you the number of people that I know personally that got pregnant when they were in college, and their very conservative family told them to get an abortion, despite being very much pro-life. And I'm like, what kind of fuck reasoning is that? Like, how can you call yourself pro-life, and then the moment that something turns on your head, you're screaming, get an abortion? That doesn't make any sense. Meanwhile, you know, If you've got those same groups of people that say that that life needs to come to term and needs to be delivered, but the moment it exits the vaginal canal, they don't give a shit about whether or not it's fed, clothed, cared for, until it's like until that life is completely in the gutter,
right?
Because of any number of issues ranging from neglect to drug abuse to God knows what else. And so when you tell me all lives matter, but you don't want to ensure all of these rights to make sure that that life has an equal opportunity of outcome. I'm talking just an equal possibility in opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It makes absolutely no sense to say all lives matter and then act in the way that they do. It doesn't make any sense at all. But I will say that I do know people who really are, quote unquote, all lives matter. And it's, you know, they're against the death penalty. They don't like the fact that cops are killing people. They don't believe that abortion is right, but they do believe in making sure that, that, you know, babies that are born are well cared for, well taken care of. That, I mean, it is possible. Mm-hmm. It's just that we've seen it used as a rallying cry by people who only care about all lives mattering as long as it's screaming at Black Lives Matter. And that's just the fucking weirdest thing ever.
It is the weirdest thing. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'll kill a bug. Like, I saw a commercial and this lady was like, I'm vegan, but I love meat. So I order my meat from assholeanimals.com.
Wait, what? That's like me saying I'm a vegan on my annual cheat year. That doesn't make a goddamn bit of sense.
Right. Well, I mean, you can eat animals as long as they're assholes first.
Look, I mean,
I always say that if I had to kill an animal to eat meat, I would be vegan because I just couldn't do it. But I'm happy that somebody else does it for me, you know?
And that's, and being somebody that's culled more animals than most people will ever count in their life, you know, I can definitely see why for some people it's a struggle. I mean, even for me, it's, you know, there's an emotion behind taking an animal and there should be, there really should be.
Yeah.
You know, as someone who's raised cattle, as somebody who goes hunting, if you feel absolutely nothing except joy, then you're not doing it right.
Right.
Like, understanding that beauty of nature and understanding that, you know, if you are in the path that they're all God's creatures, you know, it's still a very emotional event, and it should be.
It should
because
be.
That shows that you have some humanity left, you know, in you to have empathy for things outside of the human race. It's why we have animals, you know, it's why we have pets that become family members.
Right.
You know, because if a dog's just a dog, then why the fuck do you own one? You know, my dog isn't just a dog. She's my family member. Mm. And, you know, it's when she's not feeling well, I'm taking care of her and I'm worried about her. And when she is feeling well, she's an asshole and she drives me crazy and I love her. But then again, I'm sure that most people who know me say I'm an asshole and I drive them crazy, but they love me too.
Animals are like their owners, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
So it's, you know, we've got to get back to the policy of being humans first.
Mm-hmm.
And disagreeing over what we think is the best way to take care of people. And knowing, you know, like, I have had this discussion with multiple people. Like, for me, it's, I care about people. And when I see that, you know, that people are complaining about the fact that they think the government is inherently racist and that the government is inherently out to get them and hurt people, it doesn't make any sense to me then why your solution would be, let's add more government. Because it's like, that'd be like, man, I'm stepping on all of these Legos and it really fucking hurts. So I think the best way to fix the problem is to, you know, to pour some more Legos on the floor. So that way, you know, it's all spread out. No, that doesn't make any sense.
That goes to my major misconception about everything, is that from libertarian to progressives, we all say we want less government involvement. But the truth is we want more government. We want less bureaucracy. And that's why we have elections, is to get rid of politicians and bring in representatives. And that's the process. That's the washing process of democracy, is taking the bad out. And then you need to rotate those people, because once they settle in, they become bureaucrats. And bureaucrats want the status quo. They don't want change. And so there's red tape for everything. And so I don't think it's government. I wouldn't. There's not an agency I would want to get rid of. There's just an agency I think could be run leaner and better.
I think they all could be run leaner. And that's the difference. You know, like, I don't have issues with programs that serve human needs. I have issues with the number of people that are in those programs taking a cut of the money. And then the humans that absolutely need those services being told that their services are getting cut back because of X, Y, and Z, when the reality is that they've hired more people to do more things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not necessarily everything that needs it doesn't all need administration, and that's the problem. Right. It doesn't all need bureaucracy.
And a lot of it could be merged into some bigger, you know, offices. They don't all have to be these little things that just pop up because there's an issue. It could be a think tank that disperses after a while and folds into another agency, you know? So there's a lot of stuff about bureaucracy that I can't stand, but I'm going to always say I love government because I hate Vladimir Putin. You know?
Right.
So that's just me. And I think even Liz Cheney saying she wants smaller government, what she means is she just wants it to run better. You know, it's like a car with too many extra parts that's causing gas inefficiency, when you could just take some of that stuff and repurpose it and make it a better vehicle.
Absolutely. And that's just it, is that there's a lot out there that could be redone. I'm sure like, even for you, like, if you were to look at the inefficiencies in the Medicare system, the fact of the matter is that there probably could be more money available to actually serving the people.
Yeah.
But it's being spent in all the ways that you can figure out and how to deny people their medical claims or whatever. And so, you know, it's kind of one of those, it's one of those weird things where it's like,
yeah,
I get why everybody wants more government, but the way in which it gets done is completely backwards. Sure. You know,
the people in the offices, they have to justify their salary. So they're always trying to do something, whether it makes sense or not. That's the problem, is the bureaucrats within the positions. I don't want to get rid of Medicare, but I also don't want to give it to 330 million Americans when it's broken. You know, when it's running this way, I'm not going to sell a car if it's not tuned up first, you know?
No, it's, and that's what people don't understand is that, you know, if you're on Medicare and you're trying to get all this, you know, you have issues and you need care, you know, the people that are on Medicare, you know, need to be able to tell people who think that Medicare for All is the way to go and sit down and go,
yeah,
look, no, you don't want this. We don't want this right now. We don't have any choice, though. That's right. The difference.
Then some of my most popular tweets are about that. Don't give Medicare to all until it's fixed by all. You know what I mean? Fixed for all.
Exactly. And that's just it. Is that the moment that you? But the moment that you did that, you probably pissed off a bunch of people on the left. They're like, "Well, how could you not want Medicare for all?" It's like, yeah. I can't get the fucking care that I need on Medicare for all. Mm-hmm. So why do I want to put a bunch of other people in probably worse scenarios than they already are currently?
And so what that does is it just pushes – Donald Trump's plan was an a la carte insurance where you go for what you want. So if everybody gets the base Medicare, it's like getting the base Hulu, which does absolutely nothing for you. It makes you want to upgrade. And then every insurance company is going to be a specialty insurance, which can charge more. So when you then have a condition Medicare won't cover, your prostate is going to be an elective. Your bladder issues are going to be an elective. The lump in your chest, the cancer, is going to become a specialty. And Medicare is only going to cover sniffles and coughs. You know what I mean? They'll degrade it to a point to where it does nothing. And then all of a sudden you're paying for the specialty insurances, which everybody can afford or get for free just by being in office for 5 years, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it just, you know, that's one of those things. I get why people like the idea of universal health coverage, and I get why they say Medicare for all. Until mm-hmm. you actually understand what Medicare looks like now, you shouldn't want that.
Right. I mean, yes, you will be able to walk into a hospital and get served. But then depending on the cost of that, you might have to pay out of pocket for the next 6 months until you hit the other side of the donut hole. And then you have to pay 25% of everything after that. That doesn't work. That doesn't work. You can't go get healthcare when your doctor is charging $300 and up for a visit. You can't have that many visits when it only covers up to $3,000 a year. And when you add your prescriptions into that and your doctor visits and then an MRI that might cost $1,500 or an emergency room visit or an urgent care visit, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm. And so that's where, you know, sitting down and looking at it objectively, it's like, you know, what would be, you know, how would Medicare for all function better if mm-hmm. you know, you were to change things up? Like, what functions could you change to make that $3,000 go further? And we've talked about that.
Yeah. My radical idea is to fold the VA into Medicare. And just have a Part V, you know what I mean? But that's my radical thing. $360 billion a year on veteran care folded into Medicare. But that's me, you know.
And my radical idea was is that we should essentially do away with it, have what would be a modified HSA system where we mm-hmm. give you three grand. And then you pay cash for whatever services you need. And there's a lot of doctor's offices out there now that are giving discounts on the fact that you're paying cash. So what your $3,000 did before now goes even further because you don't have to pay the same amount out of pocket.
I like that. If the prices go down, then I'm all in favor of that. But you can't keep an MRI at $1,500 a shot and expect me to only survive on $3,000. You know, I can't get the
exactly.
tests. I can't get the tests if they're justifying the higher prices because of administrative costs. The truth is if you, the administrative costs in the private insurance you have now, if they were eliminated when you got Medicare, there would be a way to afford Medicare for all. There's a financial way to do it. Mm-hmm. By doing it right, it makes more sense, but you have to keep the administrative costs down in Medicare before mm-hmm. you can fold it all in. And you have to negotiate drug prices to keep them low. Once you lower the cost to me for everything, I'm happy if you give me an HSA account if an MRI is $50 because they've already paid for the machine. Even if I have to hunt for a hospital that has already paid off their machine and has lowered mm-hmm. the cost, you know?
Or, you know, the fact that there's a lot of places out there that are doing these specialty pop-up services like MRIs, CAT scans. And so, you know, if these companies, they're large companies that have mm-hmm. the ability to buy these machines outright and they're charging you $100 for a scan instead of, you know, $500.
Yeah.
great, you know, and if they're not having to pay all of these administrative costs and having their people deal with the claim and having the insurance company deal with the claim and send it back, and they're not having to wait 150 days to get paid,
right?
You know, it drastically reduces costs. And what it boils down to is that people have to be open to the idea that, you know, while a national health system like pretty much any other country has would be great, the fact of the matter is that our system is not like that now. Mm-hmm. And the idea that it will be like that is a fevered dream. Well, so
yeah,
how do you find the best of both worlds? And we've talked about that too. Mm-hmm. You know, where the government is the one that's negotiating the prices of medications, or even you could potentially say machines too. Because like we said, you know, in other countries, you have, let's say, six drug manufacturers. You have one person you have one entity saying, give me your best price. Right. Versus having six companies, 11,000 different hospitals, and each of them saying, give me your best price. Mm. And that best price is different between all of these other systems.
Man, you're touching on my show of the week, by the way. here's the thing about that is take Germany. Say they have, or France, they have universal healthcare, right? They pay slightly higher taxes for it. The thing is that they've spent the last 100 years building a social net, not destroying the social net. What we do is we react and backfill. And so we just dump money into something and say, there's our social net. Mm-hmm. And then we put a time limit on it because the other party gets into power and says, we don't need that. You know what I mean? And then the other party backfills again. And so it's just we're just spending money on things that we're destroying, or on things we're throwing away. Here's a safety net, the Consumer Protection Agency. We're going to dump money into it. And then the next administration comes in and goes, yeah, we're gutting it. And we're taking the money from that.
When, you know, and the reality is that there's probably a better way than all of that to do that. Mm-hmm. And rather than sit there and fight about all of this, I mean, quite literally, you could put the care in the hands of the people, let them decide what's best for themselves.
Yeah.
And do it in such a way that is far cheaper on multiple ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. And get out of their way when they need something like an abortion. You know what I mean?
And that's, you know, and that's just it, is that there are ways to fix the situation with healthcare that neither party wants to listen to, because it either fucks over the donors or it fucks over the idea that the government is going to be able to capitalize on a bunch of money that it's not getting now.
Right.
And so neither part for it's a non-starter for either party. And that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to remember that the government has to pay its salaries first. So it needs a certain amount just to function, just to pay its employees. And then everything above that is a profit that can be used to line the pockets of people. Like Social Security, if we funded it correctly and stopped dipping into it, it would be running great. But we constantly short it so that we can put money into pet projects. And that's just terrible.
Well, and as much as people hate it when I say it, if Social Security was running the way that it was intended, it wouldn't be a retirement account for people either.
That's true. So, I don't know if it was ever meant to be, but also the family structure was based a little differently, and market value, like wood is hundreds of dollars now for a plank of plywood. Like you can't even build a house now. You can't be a homeowner without paying way more for that house now, just because wood is more expensive, or steel, or anything. I had a friend that said that. He's like, well, the price of everything is more expensive. And I was like, yeah, because we just dumped a whole bunch of money into everybody's pockets, and now everybody can afford to buy stuff that costs more. The problem is there's certain people that were poorer to begin with, and now the inflation is affecting them. Yes, that's what happens. That's inflation. You give a whole bunch of rich people a whole bunch of money, they find it expendable and buy that vacuum for $400. And now the vacuum is $400 and the poor person can't afford it.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even in the government too, when you have a bunch of tax revenue coming in, like, you know, in that regard too, healthcare is expensive, not just because of all the administrative costs. It's expensive because of all of the taxes that get put on it to fund the government.
Right. And as we said, the malpractice insurance that people need to have.
Mm-hmm. You know, and like you said, there are ways to fix these things, and we've mm-hmm. discussed them all. It's just that somebody has to be willing to sit down and say, you know what, this isn't right. Hey, somebody from the other party, let's talk about how we can actually fix this. Let's, right. you know, people shouldn't be penalized when they have HSAs and they haven't used all of their money. They shouldn't have their money taken away from them or their FSAs right. and have that money gone. Why? What purpose does that serve other than lining the pockets of a corporation? That right. should not be legal.
That's right. Your money should be going somewhere else other than to your own pockets or your own accounts.
Well, you should be able to save that money because mm-hmm. look how realistic it is that it's like healthy, 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 healthy. You could have 15 years of great health and have a bunch of money saved up. Suddenly you have a cancer treatment that comes up. And rather than having your money taken away at the end of each of those years, you had enough money saved up that, hey, I got to go and pay for my cancer treatments in cash, and it didn't bankrupt me.
Right. But again, you know, it's the price of care to begin with.
That too.
It just is like, yeah, I could have $20,000 in my HSA account, but if I come down with cancer and the first shot is $25,000, I'm fucked anyway, you know? And on that, I want to say I should, as an American, be able to invest in that as well. As if the government is giving me $3,000 a year, I should be able to match that, like a 401k without tax penalties. I should be able to invest in that. And as a disabled person, if I should be able to earn what I can earn now, and if I earn more and put that into something tax exempt, I shouldn't be penalized and lose my disability for it. Because I want to say, because it takes me longer to learn a job and to have a job, and it's still risky being at the bottom of the ladder as a disabled person in a corporation, first in, first to go, disabled person, first to go, because it naturally costs a little bit more in understanding and accessibility for me. So corporations aren't eager to hire me, but they are eager to dump me. And so there's never going to be job security for a disabled person. So I think we need to work on that. I need to be able to earn as much as I can and then divert that just like a rich person so that I don't get penalized, you know?
Well, and that's just it, is that, you know, I would make the argument that rich people shouldn't be able to divert either, if that's the way that we're going to go.
Right.
I mean, to me, the best way that you can fix it is by doing flat rate taxes. Mm. It's like, if you're going, you know, and I've talked about this before, it's like, if, you know, you determine what the poverty line is for the previous year, anything made at and below the poverty line, tax-free for everybody, because right. you shouldn't be taxing people that are in poverty, period, right. of story.
Or close to it, by the way.
You know, but that's, I mean, that's just it, is that if you're going to say close to it, then that should be the poverty line, period, end of story.
Well, I would say like 5-10% above the poverty line, only because I make $30 more than being on the poverty line, you know?
But then again, you know, at that point, then it's just you're taxing a percentage of what you make above that. And the reality is that while you might make $30 a month, you know, while you might make $30 more than the poverty line, and mm-hmm. you get taxed on that. And so we say, okay, well, you shouldn't be getting taxed on it. Well, what about the person who's making 50? Well, they shouldn't. Okay, well, what about 100? Well, they shouldn't. What about 1,000? Right. What about 10,000? What about? And that's how we end up with all of these fucking loopholes.
And then it becomes arbitrary. I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get it. But at the same time, too, it's like, if we're going to say that if you're at this point of the poverty line, it's like anything at and below shouldn't be taxed. And if you think that is still too low, and that people that fall into a certain income above that shouldn't be taxed, that should be the poverty line.
I like that, because if you're below the poverty line, will you get a tax rebate to put you at the poverty line?
I think that's an interesting discussion to have.
Yeah, I like this. I like that idea.
But realistically speaking, is that, you know, you can figure out at what wages you are going to be tax exempt. You know, if you're only working one job, this is where it gets tricky. Because if you're working multiple jobs, that calculation becomes a little bit more difficult. And unfortunately, that's a realistic thing for a lot of Americans.
Yeah.
Not as many as people like to claim,
right.
but still more than should be. And that's one of those caveats where it's like, you know, there's a bunch of people out there that are going to, you know, going to sit down and say, oh, well, all of these Americans who have to work 2-3 jobs, you know, numerically speaking, you know, percentage-wise speaking, that number is actually really low. It's not as high as people think it is, but it's far more than it should be.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't have to work multiple jobs in order to make ends meet, period, end of story. If you're going to work multiple jobs, then whatever you're making is should be above and beyond to afford whatever luxuries you're looking for.
Right.
But when you're having to work multiple jobs just to make the poverty line, that's a problem.
That's a real problem. Yeah.
And so that's, there was actually a pretty good study about it somewhere that I was reading it a couple of years ago about what that actually looked like, because the claim that I want to say that there was this ridiculous, there was a claim that about a third of Americans were working multiple jobs, you know, and they were trying to use that as the discussion of what the minimum wage should look like. But when they actually dug into it, the number of people who were working multiple jobs and, you know, I want to say making like just like 10% above the poverty line.
Right.
Actually worked out to be something like maybe 2.5 million people at most. You know, that was just one of those things where it's like, people working multiple jobs is really difficult. And I think that in America, we need to reassess what the poverty line looks like and understand that the poverty line looks different, you know, wherever you live. Yeah. You know, a dollar here doesn't buy the same as a dollar back in Montana.
That's true.
That's realistic. You know, out here, a dollar in rent here doesn't buy the same amount or doesn't buy the same amount of space as a dollar in rent back in Montana does.
Right.
That's realistic. And so the poverty line, the idea that there is a just this, you know, a national standard poverty line is a real interesting discussion, because let me tell you something, making $15 an hour here in Washington fucking sucks, and you're going to be struggling to find a place to live anywhere.
Right. But
$15 an hour back in, you know, parts of Montana, a lot of places in Montana,
mm-hmm.
you know, you would actually probably be able to save money and put money away.
Yeah.
That it just is it's a different calculation across multiple areas, because, you know, the taxes here that we have, I'm going to say this probably for the millionth time, sales tax is regressive.
Yeah.
Because while the idea is that everybody who buys something is going to have to pitch in. Yeah, okay. So the idea is that it's fair, but is it equitable? No, because the person who has $200 to buy groceries doesn't have $200 to buy groceries. When there's a 10% sales tax, they've got $180 to buy groceries on a $200 grocery bill that they need to fulfill. Right. Whereas a person who has $2,000 gets to buy $200 in groceries, pay $20 in sales tax, and still have plenty of money left over afterwards. I mean, yeah. Sales tax is regressive, and no matter what you tell me, it's not fair to the people who are impacted the most.
I agree. If anybody's ever bought DoorDash, they understand that you can get your food for $20, but then you're paying $5 in taxes, and then you're paying $5 for the app, and then you're paying $5 for tip. So anybody understands that those taxes, they add up fast.
Well, and then they're also selective about what they apply tax to, and this is where it gets really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like some things are taxed and other things aren't, and some of it doesn't make a damn bit of sense, really.
Right.
Like for example, there was one that was a really great example about how candy was taxed, but if it contained flour, then it wasn't taxed because it was considered a baked good. So like a Hershey's peanut butter cup was taxed, but a Twix bar wasn't. And I was like, what the fuck?
Interesting.
So the way in which people try to get around taxes or try to, it's just insane.
The inheritance tax, the capital gains tax, the tax on luxury items, they play with those all the time. And Republicans get rid of them and Democrats raise them.
But when you look at what Republicans and Democrats don't do is they don't actually come up with a way that if you're on any type of welfare system, they're not trying to figure out a way that gets you off of the welfare system either by steps or anything. It's yes. either, hey, let's just make sure that everybody can get everything, whether or not they need it. And so you end up wasting a bunch of tax money that way. Or it's, hey, we're just going to kick you off the fucking thing and best of luck to you.
Because
rather than sitting down and saying, okay, here's the four things that we offer. We offer food assistance, childcare assistance, rent assistance, and just plain cash or healthcare, let's say. And let's say that you're making a certain amount of money and you're like, okay, my company affords me healthcare. I don't need that.
Right.
In a lot of places, it's like you have to take all of it or they just kick you off of all of it. Like, you don't get to pick and choose. So you don't get to sit down and say, okay, I don't need the health insurance. I need these three. And then you start making enough money and you're like, okay, well, in order to keep me at my job, I need childcare. I'm still struggling with the food, but I don't need money for rent. So I'm going to put that aside, that I don't need that anymore. Hmm. And then they start making enough money and they're like, okay, I don't need childcare anymore because my kids are old enough, but I still need some food assistance. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to piece that out. And then finally get to the point where it's like, I don't need childcare assistance. I don't need food assistance. I don't need rent assistance. I don't need healthcare. I've got all of this taken care of. Instead of stepping people off and helping create that sense of independence and allowing them, it's this fear of, well, if I don't take it all, I lose it all. And if I lose it all, then I'm just going to be stuck either back in the system or they're going to just kick me off of it when they're tired of it.
I think that's what happens. They kick you off of it suddenly instead of saying, here's the 5-year plan to get you out of poverty. You know what I mean?
Right. Or you know, anything like that. The welfare system has to have a fundamental redesign. So that way people who are in the system are empowered to start taking away pieces that they don't need.
Right. Exactly. To work towards something and to know that it's coming ahead of time. If I know I have a year to get off of food assistance, let's say, then I know I can prepare for that. You know what I mean? And I don't know how you would go about that. But I remember when I applied, they gave me health care, but I didn't need health care because I had Medicare. They wouldn't give me food assistance because I wasn't poor enough, and they wouldn't give me help with my bills, which were 80% of my income go to bills and rent. But I couldn't get help with that. If they had given me help with my bills or my rent, then I could have afforded the food, but I couldn't because they wouldn't. And so it's this weird cycle that we just we want to keep people in poverty, in enough poverty to where they're paying more for being poor.
But then they also complain, but then the politicians also want to complain about, you know, these welfare queens and this, that, and the other. And it's like you're not structurally creating a system in which people are able to pick and choose what they need.
Right.
And save the state money on the things that they don't.
Right. Why
are you giving them everything when they themselves are saying they don't need everything? Or they're working at a place where they're given certain things and they don't need that. That doesn't make a damn bit of sense.
Right. If you give people what they don't need, then they don't use it and then you don't spend money on it. That's the thing. It's always easier to offer somebody something you know that they're not going to take, you know?
Well, it's easier for them to be able to sit down and say, oh, you don't need that? Okay. Well, I guess you don't need any of it.
Right. That's just
and ridiculous. So then you get people who end up making the choice of working as little as they do in order to keep the benefits that they do need.
Right. Of course.
That doesn't make any sense.
I can't work. If I work, I can only work a certain amount. So what kind of job can I get where I tell them I can only work till a certain point? You know, until I earn this much. And can you monitor that for me, by the way? Because I don't know, like pre-tax, post-tax, I don't know what's going on. If I gross too much, is that an issue if I net less? You know what I mean? So, and how am I supposed to look that up? How am I supposed to know? How am I supposed to educate myself on that? And that these are the real problems is there might be ways. My mom, she was disabled. They sent her to school to become a travel agent. And then she became, she had a home office and she was a functioning member of society that earned an income until the travel market tanked because of apps. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there was nowhere for her to go after that because they had timed her out. She had learned enough and she had gotten out of the system and they wouldn't let her back in. And that's a tragedy because stuff happens all the time.
Absolutely. And then on top of that, it's like, you know, how, you know, as a state, you know, how do you figure out where you can put people so that way that if you give them that 5-year plan, how are they going to be able to get out of it, get out of that system? Like, the idea is that, you know, the entitlement should be there for the people who need it or the people who need parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to keep people from using it, then you need to figure out how you can get people out of it,
right,
and not just kick them off of it. Because if you're giving someone the choice between work less to get all of the benefits,
mm-hmm,
work and get none of the benefits, I'm sorry, but I can guarantee you that there's enough people out there that are going to make the choice of, I'm just not going to work and I'm going to collect all the benefits, or I'm going to work very little and I'm not going to collect the benefits.
Yeah.
Whereas if you give people the tools to say, all right, this is all you qualify for, now let's take a look and see what you actually need. Okay, you only need 3 of the 4 things. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's help you come up with a plan for how do you get to where you need one less a year, if we can figure it out. Like,
yeah,
instead of creating the fear that someone's going to lose something, give them the tools to succeed, so that way they can sit down and say, I don't need that anymore. That's right. The difference. That is really the difference. If you set someone up for success,
mm-hmm,
to make enough to say, you know what, I don't need that anymore, you give people power.
Yeah.
But rather than keeping them in fear of, oh my God, what's going to happen to me and my family if I lose X?
But we generalize to automate. That nobody understands that what you're talking about is an individual helping an individual with an individual situation. A homeless person in Florida needs different stuff than Jason. You know what I mean? And so it's a different skill set. But if you just throw us both in the same machine and then say the homeless guy is part of a curve that I'm a part of, that Jeffrey's a part of, and we're basing everything on that, and then throw politics in and say, well, I don't like the homeless guy because he's not working hard enough, and that Jason guy, he should get a job, but Jeffrey's doing great, let's help him, then everything's fucked.
Exactly. You know what I mean? You know, it's the same with school, you know. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of things that got catered to me because I was on the smarter end of average, right, you know. And it's like, look, that's not fair to everybody else. Like, not everybody else can sit down and read a math book and understand advanced calculus. That's right. Not fair to the person who's getting help and struggling with algebra.
Man, that is tough, because there was a series on TikTok about that, how some guy had come up with the idea that we should devote resources to the students that will most succeed and take them away from students that show a lack of ability. And that's how our school system has been run for like 100 years. And so that's just interesting to me. We don't devote resources to the kids that need it. But every kid is on this planet to know something. You know what I mean? We just need to find that. We need to find that. We didn't know that Martin Luther King was going to be Martin Luther King when he was 8 years old. And we could have denied him an education just based on his skin color and lost that. And that's the thing. Albert Einstein was German. If we had come here and we would have been like, ew, you're German, we hate you, fuck off, we would never have gotten the Manhattan Project. You know what I mean?
And that's, you know, and even then you've got, you know, that's a weird mentality to be like, oh, mm-hmm, well, let's just shift all of these resources away. It's how about we shift the resources in such a way that instead of saying, oh, well, you need this and you don't need this, it's like, okay, what do you need for the career you would like to have?
Right.
So that way you're not taking classes and learning things that you're never going to touch again. Like,
that's right.
You know, for me, knowing statistics, knowing calculus, knowing algebra, it's all important for things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
Trigonometry, probably a little less important.
Right. Consumer math, you already got that.
But even just like, you know, it's one of those things where back in the day, you know, people had home ec and they understood how to budget and they had, they understood like personal finance math. And, you know, it's funny to me now that that's something that they're starting to bring back.
They need to,
you know, and so, but also too, like one of the things that we fail to consider is like most of the businesses out there are small businesses. So how do you help kids understand what business math looks like for the small business owner?
Right.
You know, things like that. That's, you know, they don't need to be taking advanced algebra. They don't need to be taking trigonometry. They don't need to be taking physics.
Right. It's so weird.
But for all of the ones that want to do chemistry, that want to do physics, great. Let's make sure that they've got all the resources available to do that. And especially in the information age, that's a lot easier to do now.
Oh, yeah. It's just, it's weird that we teach kids what you're talking about, trigonometry, algebra, civics in school, but we don't teach them life skills. We leave that to their homes, but then we take their parents away because we won't give them a living wage, so there's nobody to teach them the life skills. And then once they hit 18, we're upset because they have no life skills, because you weren't there to expose your child to everything, to see what interested them. Hey, I could have played the cornet in third grade, but I couldn't afford it. So guess what? I played the recorder and moved on to something different. You know what I mean?
Right. But
I was exposed to it. You know, I just wasn't exposed to it enough. I think kids should be exposed to that stuff. Let's find out what they are good at the time, because that'll be in their heads forever. Right. And they can always go on to something else as long as education is free.
So. And that's, or, you know, even still, like, you have so much information out there now that there are ways in which you can get students to learn advanced topics.
Yeah, they are.
You know, and I mean, I watch my kids do it all the time. Mm-hmm. They're learning art things from the internet.
Right.
They're learning new techniques from the internet. They're practicing it themselves in drawing pads, on tablets. They're not in art classes. They're learning this stuff elsewhere.
Right.
So if you mean to tell me that we can't figure out how to give the most advanced kids the tools to be able to do what they're eventually going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told people, you know, about my master's program. You know, what we always said in my master's program was not that I was smarter than you. I just knew how to use Google better than you did.
Exactly. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Instead of a parent observing and monitoring a child's life skills like you are, a lot of parents can't do that, and so children are skipping through everything to find it themselves, you know, because they don't know what's important to learn and what isn't important to learn, and so they're using Google better and better and leaving their parents out of it. Before we end the show on the topic, I'm just going to say I watched a show called Crime of the Century, and it's on HBO Max. And so it's a searing indictment of Big Pharma and the political operatives and government regulations that are involved in this stuff, and the reckless distribution of opioids and the whole opioid epidemic. And yeah, it's pretty much right on topic for this show, because we talked a lot about, you know, the medical system. And man, it's scary. It's scary. It's what we talk about doctors being, you know, just when they start working for themselves and their own profits, they're not working for us anymore, but they're not telling us that they're doing that. And having Big Pharma involved in that, and the way they distributed and the way they just blatantly lied to get FDA approval for this stuff, man, it's something to look into.
No, it's absolutely scary, especially when you see that, you know, the way in which they cornered the market was just, I mean, genius by their own standards and by any other standards, but absolutely diabolical.
If they had been honest about everything, then it wouldn't have been genius. It just wouldn't have been approved. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
All right. Well, thanks for being here, and join us Thursday for the continuation of this episode, because we have some good topics coming up.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time. To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it.
You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the color have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Welcome to Public Access America.
Yes, we can.
Now on Instagram
and SoundCloud.
He wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter.
Apple
Podcasts, the Stitcher Smart Radio app,
Podable,
and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America. History in the making.
Making history.
In the making.
Let me see. Where is it? There it is. The WHO is is holding their World Health Assembly. And that's kind of exciting. And I wanted to let everybody know they could find the World Health Organization on Twitter at WHO, at WHO. And there's a hashtag, WHA74, which is covering the conference. And I'm going to put the YouTube channel information and the website channel in the description portion of this podcast, because I think it's important that everybody knows what's going on with the World Health Organization, because it seems to be more bipartisan, more country run. And so they're going to have some topics. It's all about the pandemic and everything else, you know, so check that out, follow the World Health Organization like I do, and maybe learn something that your politicians aren't telling you.